This last week was a wonderful week for me. I got a chance, I got a call to go teach at, actually do an assembly at Saguaro High School, the public school. I was at Doolin Middle School all of, I think the month of August. I was there every week, and I did teachings in that school, actually touched every student in that school, which was great. And then after Doolin, I went to Lawrence Middle School and worked in Lawrence for 2 days teaching classes. And I teach classes on sex trafficking, and I teach classes on pornography and these things for the kids. I don't show kids porn, of course, but some of you are like, what is he doing? Why is he on stage right now? No. But I teach them about internet dangers and what that looks like in their world, because their world is a far different world than our world. And at Saguaro, I was asked, I had a really great topic. They had me come and teach an assembly on for the boys in the school on respecting women, and which was near and dear to my heart. If anybody kind of knows me, they know that I write a lot. I tend to write an exorbitant amount of material, all on very sensitive subjects, and I have a couple blogs. I've been published by Tate Publishing. I'm working on probably 3 new projects right now with a publisher out of New Mexico. I'm one of those type A guys. I don't know if, like, where if I'm like sitting around, you know, doing nothing, I'm like, I think I'm gonna write another book. Or I think I need to start, like, you know, something's got to be major for me. I always got to be really active. I tend to be that kind of a guy, for good or for ill. Pastor Scott heard about what I was teaching on at the school, and he wanted me to teach on the same subject here with you today. And so that's what I'm going to do. Obviously, it's a very sensitive topic, and, you know, my heart really breaks for the mistreatment of women worldwide. Maybe it's because I've seen it firsthand, maybe because of my background, where some of the most traumatic, probably, events in my own life as a kid were things that I saw that regarded my mom, So it's led me to have a very disgusted attitude or emotion when it comes to any kind of violence towards women. Even if I'm watching a program on TV and there's violence towards women, it really bothers me. You know what I mean? It really affects me. It's like I hate to watch it. Even if it's like an action movie and there's some kind of violence towards a woman, it just really bugs my heart. You know, one of the things I want to convey in this is that a woman's ills are due, and this is my belief in 44 years of living, is due to man's pride and lust. That the issues that face women today stem from men issues. They're men's issues with lust, which is a form of disrespect, which is common in the culture. It was common when I was brought up. It's common in the world. Now, this is because of nature, meaning the Christian worldview, is that we are sinners, and because we are sinners, we have a sinful inclination. And lust is a part of that sinful inclination of mankind. So let me give you for example, when I am in high school or even junior high and I see a girl walking by me that I think's cute, I might yell out, "You're hot, you're this." I start looking at her as a commodity, as something that is not a human being. And that's because of an issue that I have within my heart. That's the Christian worldview. I have a problem there. But it also is something, a learned behavior that we get from culture as well, of how we are to treat women. I've kind of narrowed it down in that disrespect of women is an issue of men's misplaced fear, pleasure, and praise. Those are three things that I think are at the root issue when it comes to the disrespect and the mistreatment of women worldwide. It is a men's issue because they have misplaced fear instead of fearing God, right? Instead of fearing the ultimate judge, they have misplaced fear. Or it's an issue of misplaced pleasure, meaning they find more pleasure instead of in the obedience of God and the pleasure in the submission unto the Lord, they instead find pleasure in their actions. And then it moves into a misplacement of praise, meaning instead of God being the one in control of your life and the one that you should desire to live for, instead men have this misplaced praise where they want to be in control and the source of praise in their homes or in their lives. We're going to watch a stunning testimony I've broken up into three parts. This is by the famous interior designer of all people. Her name's Lisa Luby Ryan. You might have known her if you're into interior decoration and stuff like that. And when we watch it, this first part, I want to remind you of two passages of scripture that I want you just to have in your brain. One of them is found in Ephesians chapter 5. And this is the famous section that's talking about husbands and wives. And I want to remind you where it says in verse 25 of chapter 5, "Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her, so that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. Husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies, for he who loves his wife loves himself." I want you to think of that passage as you watch the beginning of this, and I also want you to think of another passage in the book of 1 Peter chapter 3 that speaks of honoring your wife, something that was so radically penned by the Holy Spirit through the Apostle Peter in verse 7. "Husbands, likewise, dwell with your wives with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered." My heart today is that there would be a healing in men's lives, in our church, and certainly in our community, certainly in the boys that I spoke to at Saguaro, to limit the pain that happens in so many women's lives, that we would look at them through the biblical lens, for the biblical lens is the right lens to which to look at these kind of issues with. So without further ado, Lisa Luby Ryan.
I wanted to be a wife and a mother that was different than the wife that I had seen my mother be, and give my children a different childhood that I had. And so I had spent my years dreaming of what I thought a marriage should be and what a husband should be, and one who would protect me and guide me and love me. I grew up not knowing what a family was. My mother's identity came from men. I saw men come in and out of our home. We were sworn to secrecy. Our house as a child was very chaotic. We never knew if my dad was drinking when he came home, if and when he came home. My dad raped me at the age of 6, and throughout my life up until about the time I was 16, and you know, everything about my childhood, it was just, it was lonely. It was hard. It was not what a child deserved to have. I continued to follow in the life of finding men who were abusive, what I knew, abusive alcoholics. But all I wanted was to be loved. And for me, being loved was having a sexual relationship. And I was willing to do anything to have that.
It's amazing what a woman goes through in our world. By the way, every time I've watched the video, I've broken down. So if I cry, it's because it's pretty heavy. Let me read to you some of the things that women do go through in our world. You got to realize that women, one out of every three women that are born in the world, experience sexual violence or physical violence. One out of every three. It's an amazing figure, man. It just blows my brain that today, one out of every three girls that are being born are going to go through these huge traumatic experiences in their life. I mean, it's as radical of a thought. Girls between the ages of 16 and 24 experience the highest rate of intimate partner violence in our culture in the United States of America. Between 16 and 24, they experience violence already. You know, campus sexual assault, one out of every five girls at college experience sexual assault. One out of every five. I mean, how many of us want to send our kids to college knowing that the stat is one out of every five of them are going to have to face this junk? Seriously. It's radical to think about that kind of stuff. You know, when I'm in the junior highers, with the junior highs in the class, you know what's the craziest part about it? It's like I'll ask the girls, I'll like, hey, what do guys say to you? You know, this is junior high, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And you know what the guys' request of girls is? Nude pictures. 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. This is what they're concerned about. This is what females are concerned about and have to deal with on a daily basis in our culture. Dude, that's radical. The harassment, the sexual harassment of women in our culture is absolutely beyond anything. Women sometimes think, the average of a woman that leaves work and goes to lunch in New York and comes back to her office, she gets sexually harassed up to 20 times just in that hour and a half. It just blows my brain that this happens. You know, in some parts of our world, like in New Delhi, 92% of women reported having experienced some form of sexual violence. So some parts of the world, 92%. I mean, the stats are just absolutely, absolutely gross. You know, we think of how many of these people, these women, have gone through everything they go through, and yet we wonder why abortion is so high. You want to know why it's so high? It's not a women issue. It's a men's issue. See, worldwide, more than 700 million women alive today were married as children, below the ages of 18. Of those women, more one out of every three, or some 250 million, were married before the ages of 15. Okay, this is what our world If women, you want to know what men think of you, all you need to do is read this. See, that's the sad truth. And I wish it wasn't that way. But it's just, that's the fact. What I was sharing with those students is that the issue is really whenever you see someone saying, "Oh, that girl's hot. This is all, you know, you're all," you got to understand there's a problem in the heart with that kind of disrespect. And all these statistics show there is a huge issue that's wrong with our hearts and how men treat women worldwide. There's something wrong with us. And we have to get real about it. You have to get to a place where you just are sick of you. Where you're finally at a place where you're like, "I'm sick of me. I'm sick of my heart. I don't want to look at the girls this way anymore." Now, Christians, we have the Bible. And I love the Bible for many different reasons than many people. I've found that out over the years. You know, being a guy who was raised the way I was without the Bible in my life, and then just picking up the Bible one day and reading it and falling in love with the God of the Bible, not with any church. No one ever came to me and said, "Read John." No one ever said that. I started in the book of Genesis and read. I fell in love with the Bible. And you know why? Because it was a wreck. I thought, man, the people in the Word are crazy. I thought my life was bad. But, you know, you look at really the mistreatment of women biblically, and it's of epic, epic proportions. Now, I paint this picture because we're going to get to a contrast. But I first look at, And I know there's young people here, so I'm not going to get into the specifics of these passages. I want to respect some of the youth that are in the building today. But I want to point out passages to you so at least you can reference them. One of them is in 2 Samuel chapter 13. I've heard pastors say they love King David. It's funny. They go, "Oh man, King David is one of my heroes." Ouch. Ouch. That stabs me in the heart. Like, he's one of your heroes? My heavens, man. Like, that's a horrible, horrible hero to have biblically. I know that might stun a ton of you. But King David was a real troubled individual in many ways. In 2 Samuel 13, he has a son named Amnon, who desires to sleep with his sister, his half-sister. David had many wives, so he had many children. And the event goes in 2 Samuel 13 that Amnon just constantly presses on Tamar, the sister, constantly is saying to her, "Come on, come 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 on." I can relate to that. Constantly pressuring her to where she is forced by Amnon to have relations with him. And the sad part of the story is that after she has relations with her half-brother, though she does not want to, what Amnon does after is deplorable. It is downright a woman's nightmare. He looks at her and he says, you know what? He becomes disgusted with her. And he says, "Go away." He discards her as just a commodity of just something to be used. And he used her, and that was all she was good for, and that was it. And then he didn't want nothing to do with her anymore. And you know what the most worst part of the story is? King David does absolutely nothing. The dad does absolutely zilcho. This is after his time with Bathsheba. You think David had it together because he repented in Psalm 32 and 51? Wrong. Sorry. That guy was a mess. Could you imagine a father not doing anything about that situation? And so many women have to put up with this. So many women have to deal with fathers who will not act in these situations. Judges, one of the most horrible stories, 19. The story of, or the event of the Levite, which was in the Old Testament, a Levite was supposed to be a holy person, man. It was supposed to be one of the priests who actually served in the temple. The Levites could do it, the tribe of Levi. They were designated kind of men to serve in the Jewish temple. And it's the whole event is about a Levite having a concubine, and then he actually takes in, him and his concubine find a visitor just in the town square. He's sleeping for the night. He's taking a little, you know, like a he needs a nap, and no one in the town will let him in. And the Levite and the concubines notice the guy, and they go, "Hey, you need to get out of here, man. This is not a great town to be in, man. We're kind of in Detroit right now. You know what I mean? It's kind of rough, you know. So let's go inside, you know." And so, so they go inside, and as the night progresses, all these men of the town knock on the door and demand that they put out the gentleman who is the visitor of the town so that they can rape him carnally. And the Levite, what he does is he says, "You can't do that. That would be a tremendous, horrible thing. This is a person is a guest." And the crowd is so vehemently violent that he literally puts out his concubine for them to abuse. And they abuse her all night, it says, until she's dead. Brutal. What's the issue? Men's issue. It's a man's issue. Genesis 38. This passage actually changed my whole world, and this is what led me to actually want to read the rest of the Bible. But it was Tamar's mistreatment, or not her mistreatment, but being mistreated by Judah. Judah was her father-in-law. And Judah was supposed to help Tamar in her life, because her husband died. And in Jewish culture, how it would work is if you had a daughter-in-law who lost your son, then what you would do is you would give the daughter your next in line son to perpetuate the lineage of your brother who died. And that's what would happen. Well, it happened twice where two men were given to Tamar. Both of them died. And Judah got a hard heart and said, "You know what? I don't want to lose another son." So when his next born became of age to give to Tamar, Judah said, "No, nope, not going to happen. I'm not giving you the son." And that put Tamar in a very bad situation culturally. Being a widow, being a young widow, not having any kids. It put her in a place of like a third-class citizen or even worse in that society. So what Tamar has to do is Tamar knows about Judah's character. So what she does is she dresses up as a prostitute. And Judah goes to a town and wants to have a little fun. And so he sees a prostitute on the side of the road, and he asks for her, and he goes and he does what he does with her, and it happens to be Tamar. Judah ends up sleeping with his daughter-in-law. Judah's issues. I look at just the Bible, and I look at the concubines in the Old Testament. Who had concubines? Abraham? Gideon? David? Solomon had enough of them, that's for sure. Right? A concubine, if David is your hero, then why does your hero have sex slaves? See, I'm against sex slavery. I believe Christians should be against sex slavery and sex trafficking. I think it is an abuse of women. The Bible tells us that we are to love our neighbors as ourselves. And this is not what happens. So we look at these concubines that, yeah, it was part of the culture. Yeah, we can understand that. Sure, it was happening, but that doesn't mean it was right. I look at issues with even today, Mormonism with Joseph Smith. I look at Islam with Muhammad. What are the big issues with those two founders? And I mean, look at how they treated women. And those become big issues. Now, in the book of Hosea, I want to share with you guys something in the book of Hosea that's really powerful, how God looks at this. When God is disciplining Israel for all their sins, and remember, here is God who's looking at all of man's doings, and he's obviously so probably saddened by everything that's in it. In chapter 4 of Hosea, he approaches Israel, and he's describing all of the things that the nation of Israel has done in being like a harlot, committing spiritual harlotry, going away from God. But notice what he says in verse 14 of chapter 4. When he refers to the daughters of Israel, the women, he says this, "I will not punish your daughters when they commit harlotry, nor your brides when they commit adultery." Why won't God punish the women of Israel? Why won't he do it? You know why? It says in that the second part of that verse, "For the men themselves go apart with harlots and offer sacrifices with a ritual harlot. Therefore, people who do not understand will be trampled." So what is the reasoning that God says, "I'm not going to judge the women"? It is because of the men. See, even God says it's a man's issue. Men, we need to wake up. We need to rethink our lives. Women's issues are men's issues. I believe that today's women's issues, even today's women's issues, are a reaction to thousands of years of mistreatment of women. Homosexuality, lesbianism. Why are women sick of men? Because they have a lot of reasons to be sick of men. Issues of pornography, prostitution, and sex trafficking. Why is that even there? Why do so many people in the United States fly over to the Philippines so they can hang out with 14-year-old girls? Why is there such a demand that sex trafficking is in the, you know, $80 billion a year range, and pornography is in the $92 billion a year range? These are unimaginable figures. I mean, these are just, your brain should just be like, boom, right now. Like, whoa. You know, why is that? Because there's a huge demand for your children in the world. There's an incredible demand for this. Why? From who? From men. You know, why is United States, why did feminism take such hold and such root? Was it just because it was because? No, it's a response. It's a response to men's abuse. Women couldn't vote in the United States till 1920. That's hard to believe. But they couldn't vote. It's a reaction. Abortion. 40 million kids are aborted. I think it's every year now in the world. You know, why are those happenings? Where's the men that are they going? Are the men going with these women to get the abortions? When you go to abortion clinic, are the men there too? Like, yeah, this is my girl. We're going to go get an abortion. Is that what's happening? No. What happens? It's the woman who has to go alone. Where is the man who's impregnating, right? So we see so much injustice that's done, and God does something beautiful, guys. He does something so beautiful, so God. In the midst of such darkness, God just goes, you know what? There is no man that's going to help you guys and show you guys how to do it. There's no man that's going to do it, so I'm going to do it. I'm going to show you what a man's going to be like, what a man should be like. I'm going to give you an example. I'm not going to send another man so you have to look to some man. It's going to be God in flesh that is going to be your example. And this is what God does in the midst of darkness. He penetrates that darkness with himself to become the greatest light in the world. The greatest changer of women's lives is no less of a person than Jesus. So I want to spend the rest of our time focusing on Jesus. But I want to continue with her testimony right now.
I left my husband and my children for another man. It was very hard. I learned behavior. I was doing all of the things that I had promised and wanted never to do. To my children, I was repeating that behavior. I felt dirty. I felt shameful. I felt guilty. I didn't want the life that I had. I wanted to be different. I would say, okay, Lord, you know, I'm going to just trust you, and I'm going to share the desires of my heart with you, and we're just going to walk this out because you're all I've got. That night I asked Jesus into my life. He was my only hope. Because the course I was taking was a crash course, and I needed him. This was in February. Well, in March, April, I met a man, and I just knew he was from God. By August, Jay and I were engaged. We bought a beautiful home together, and he loved me and he loved my children. God spoke to me one day, as clear can be, and he said to me, he goes, how can I heal you if you're not willing to heal yourself? I gave him his ring back, and I told him, I said, God has spoken to me personally, and I have to trust him, and I have to let him be the husband that I've never had, the father that I never had. I have to let him provide for me, because otherwise our marriage would never work.
I love that section of the video because she just, even though she has this person in her life, she goes, you know what, I need to have just an encounter with Christ. And that's what is so beautiful about the Bible, is because it has such reality of this darkness that we all are there, all of us men certainly and women, but us men, we've got to just admit that, man, this is such a true book. It certainly tells where our hearts are at. But then out of this darkness, again, you see these women having these encounters with Jesus. John chapter 4. Right? Jesus has an encounter with this woman, this Samaritan woman has this encounter with Jesus at the well. And it's just amazing, right? Where Jesus, out of the way that most Jews went to Galilee during this time, and Jesus was traveling. He was going from one area of Israel to Galilee, to Judea, to Galilee, and he could have just went the way most Jews went, and that was this long route, just so they didn't have to pass through the Samaritans, which were kind of a hated group of people. But like Jesus, Jesus says in John chapter 4, in verse 4, he says, he needed to go through Samaria. That's what John says, that Jesus really needed to do this. He knew there was something there he needed to do. And so he goes and he breaks down any prejudice, men, woman prejudice, Samaritan, Jewish prejudice. And he goes to this region and he goes to this well, and there's a woman there, and there's this amazing encounter where you see how Jesus treats this woman. First of all, Jesus as a rabbi talks to this woman. In that culture, rabbis did not talk to women. It was a wrong thing to do. And yet Jesus he says to her, "Give me a drink." And he starts this huge conversation with her that's just absolutely wonderful. And just think what it would have been like for that woman to think of what, you know, God, what is the shame that's in her life, the issues that are in her life? What is this guy going to think about her? And yet Jesus doesn't care what the culture thinks. He doesn't care how the culture acts, how men's culture is and everything like that. He says, "Hey, I'm going to love this person." You know, and Jesus is the perfect example of a guy who looks at a woman and he doesn't look at them in a lustful way. He doesn't look at them in a way to get something out of them. He really is caring and concerned with who they are. So John 4 is a huge area where we look at and we go, man, Jesus is awesome with these women. I, as a man, go, man, I need to be like that, you know, when I'm thinking about talking to a woman. Am I kind? Am I patient? You know, I think of John chapter 8, a woman caught in adultery. What a scary situation. Where's the guy in that story? I don't know if you guys ever thought about that, but in John chapter 8, a woman is brought before Jesus and said, "Hey, the law says you should stone this girl. You should kill her. You know, what about you, Jesus? What do you say?" Everything like that. Where is the gentleman in that story? Again, the woman is put on the issue. You know, it's her issue. You know, again, like I say about abortion, it's a woman's issue. Well, no, it's a man's issue. Men shouldn't be impregnating women. That's what shouldn't be happening. Where is the men in that account of John chapter 8? You know, in this male-dominated world. You know, and what does Jesus do, man? He totally loves her. He totally has compassion on her. This is just absolutely amazing. You know, I think of Luke chapter 7, verse 37, where Jesus is at a Pharisee's house. He's at this religious leader's house, right? And this woman kind of comes into the home and anoints Jesus' head, if I remember. It might have been her head with oil, or it might have been her feet. There's a different accounts of this event. And she does it, though. She anoints him, and she wipes her, I think it's her, his feet with her hair, and kind of makes this scene. And everybody, or all the males around the table are disgusted. They're all bummed out. They're all like, "Oh my gosh, if you knew, Jesus, that this person was a sinner, you know, Jesus would never have allowed this, knowing this girl's past, what she has done." And yet Jesus goes on to use her as an example of one who's forgiven much. And an example of someone who loves much. So the example of love, Jesus says, is look at this woman and look at how she treats me. That's another example of how Jesus treats women. I look at Mark 5:34, where there's a woman who probably couldn't do anything in the religious world of the Jews because she had a flow of blood, it says, for over 10 years. So she had an infirmity, something wrong with her, where she had a continual flow of blood from her body. And in that culture, you couldn't go to the temple. You would be marked as unclean. And she seeks out Jesus just to touch him. She touches him. This healing power comes out of our Lord, heals her. Jesus turns around, and he could have just kept walking. You know, in that culture, he could have just kept walking and been fine. But what does Jesus do? Man, he turns around, and he wants to go, hey, who touched me, man? And he's looking for her, and she's right there, and she's like, oh, man, I touched you. And he just loves on her. He's just, oh, man, your faith has made you well. You know, daughter of Israel. You know, Jesus is not afraid to approach her. You know, he goes against everything in that culture. You know, Matthew 15:28, a woman, a Canaanite woman, a woman who is a pagan. Jesus goes up to her and heals her daughter from afar, pretty radical. And Jesus says that that woman has great faith. He says that out of all the people, he says, man, you got great faith. And you know what the disciples were doing? You know, did they want to help out the woman? Did they want to say, oh, you know, there's a woman that's here to see you, Lord, right on? No, because they're stuck in this ugly place as men. And so what they did is they said, you know what, just go away. That's what they said to her. You know, but Jesus, man, he's just such a beautiful example to me. You know, see, that's the beautiful thing about Christianity, is I don't have to look to Muhammad. He's not a great example. I don't have to look to Joseph Smith of the Mormon fame. He's not a great example either. But I can look to Jesus, who is the perfect example of how we should treat women, of how we should look at them. All the women that I've mentioned, John 4, John 8, Luke 7, Mark 5, Matthew 15, how were they treated by men in their lives? How were these women treated by men in their lives that brought them to the place of the events that we have recorded in the Gospels? See, they don't just stand alone, do they? Those events don't just stand alone. There's a life behind those events. And those things that have happened to those women in those events that have led them to need a man in their life who would be the right-on example. And they found it. They found it in Jesus. So today, who do women have today to go to? You know who it should be? It should be the church. It should be dudes in the church. That's why in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 1, it says, treat older women as mothers and treat younger women as sisters. There should be an incredible purity within the church of how we treat one another, especially how we treat our kids and how we treat men, how we treat women, how we care for them. Let me ask you, what is the example that you're giving out? What are you like at the house? Are you short with your wives? Do you get violent with them? Do you get mad at them and curse at them? These are things that should bring you to utter, utter sorrow in your life. And what I hope this morning is that that everything we've talked about, that there's something in us men, and for some of you, you really need to hear this. But there needs to be an utter brokenness in your life, and now is the time. You need to surrender your life to the will of Jesus Christ. You need to allow God to break you because you have misplaced your fear of God. You've misplaced your pleasure in this world, and you've misplaced your praise. Instead of glorifying God and being concerned about the glorification of God, we have desired to glorify ourselves. And that should break us as Christian men. That should make us go, man, you know what? I want to change. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with saying you blew it. There's nothing wrong with saying, you know what, I need to do something about it. And the things that we need to do about it are this. The Bible says, repent. It says repent. And that means change. That means start changing your thinking about this. Start going, you know what? Something's wrong with me. The problem isn't my spouse. There's nothing a woman should do. I can't imagine anything a woman could do that would lead you to have to hit a woman, especially after seeing what I saw. There's nothing that a woman could do. I don't care, you know, if she's swinging at you. I remember growing up and I used to see in high school the violence between some of my friends and their girlfriends, man, and just beating each other up physically, just horrible. But there's nothing that a woman could do to make you have to throw down on her. You know what I mean? There's just nothing, I just can't see nothing that she can do to make you do that kind of action. And so there needs to be a mind change where you go, Lord, you know what? Let me start seeing things. Let me want to glorify your name in the world. Let me have a joy in glorifying you and no longer me. Because if you can get your mind and God gives you a heart and opens up your eyes to want to glorify him, and you should cry out for that. God, change me. I am crying out to you. Let me seek your glory and not my own fame on this planet. And you cry out to God and he grants you that. As you seek him, the effects of that will be you will confess. That's how you know that you are seeking the glory of God now. Because you will tell people. You will go up to your pastor. You will say, I need counseling. You will say to your wife, you know what? I'm a mess. I need counseling now. You will do whatever it takes because you know that you are not glorifying God, and that has burdened you more than anything. Over the sorrow that you have towards what you've done to your wife and to your kids, you will have a burden so immense in your heart because you have defamed God. You have defamed the name of God to your family by your actions. And that happens too often, right? Where how many of us go, I want nothing to do with Christianity. Why? Because my dad was a Christian and he was a jerk. And the other thing you'll do is you'll get into accountability. It won't just be that you're going to confess something to the glory of God and say, you know what, I've done something wrong, but you are going to get the help you need. You are going to meet with people. You are going to deal with it. And that's what I ask you men to do today. I ask you to search your hearts. Ask the Lord to search your hearts and say, what is it that needs to change in me? You might not be here and you might go, well, I've never beaten anyone. Yeah, but how do you look at women? Do you look at them and still go, oh man, that one's hot. That one's awesome. You know, do you still have that lustful inclination to use? Because that's where it all stems from. See, we all need to have areas of our life that are changed. And all of us need to come to a place where we walk humbly with the Lord in these areas. So that's all I'm going to say about that. I hope today, though, today's a day. I hope today's a fresh day for you. For you men out there, I hope you see things a little different. And I hope today you make a decision. Talk to someone. Talk to me. Talk to one of the ministers here. Talk to someone that can point you in the right direction. Before we end up with the worship team coming up, I want to finish her testimony because it is gorgeous. And the reason why I like her testimony so much is because, you know what? Remember, there's men that have affected her life. And this is what she's trying to work through. Does that make sense? She's trying to work through everything she has seen and everything she has gone through. And it's such a beautiful, glorious ending. So we're going to watch it, and then the worship team is going to come up and lead us in one last song.
Needed someone that I could trust, that I could share my deepest, darkest secrets with. I had started Christian counseling with a an inner healing process with an amazing woman named Joyce. There were days where we would just pray and we wouldn't say anything. And there were other days where we would go through step by step as if peeling an onion and just revealing in each layer that came off, the closer I knew I was to a new life. It was easier for me to share what my mother had done or my father had done or my ex-husband had done. But it was harder for me to share what I had done. One day I showed up for our counseling session and I went in and said, okay, Joyce, I've forgiven everybody, you know, my mother for this, this, and this, my father for this, this, and this. And I said, I'm done. I am ready to go. I am ready to continue my walk with Jesus. And she just sat there. And she sat there. She goes, and she prayed and she said, there's still more work to be done. And I wanted to run and I wanted to go. And I couldn't. Because I knew what my choice was. I could either go back to the life I had or to continue on this walk. And I said, okay, I've got one more thing to tell you. And she just sat there and prayed. And I said, my senior year of high school, I had an abortion. All I wanted was to be loved. And that's all I knew to do. And she just sat and she sat and she sat and she prayed. And I thought, okay, why can't I leave? And she just continued to sit there. And I said, okay, this is it. I'm going to tell you one last thing and I'm finished. After I left the voice and their father for the other man, I said, I got pregnant. And I said, I couldn't have that child because of all the guilt and shame that I already carried. She just didn't say anything. She just sat there and prayed. And I thought, okay, Lord, how would she know? How could nobody knew that there was one last thing? And I realized that God knew. And he wanted me pure, that he didn't want to let me go. And so I just looked at her and I said, Joyce, I said, I had one more abortion. And I said, it wasn't very long ago. I said, it was with Jay. And I said, but the hardest part was I knew Jesus then and I didn't turn to him. And I said, and what even made it harder was it was Jay's only child. And we just sat and we prayed. And I looked up and my greatest fear was that she was going to be gone and Jesus would be gone. And yet they were persistent. And they knew at that point that there was nothing else. And I knew at that point that I was free. I walked out of her office that day. And I no longer lived in a gray world. I lived in a very black and white world. The sky was bluer, the grass was greener, the birds sang. And it was as if I walked into a whole new world. And I knew that day who I was in him and that he loved me. And there was no more guilt and shame, that it was gone. He was now carrying that for me. And I was now capable of being the wife and the mother that he, and the person that he created me to be. had shared my secrets and all that I had with Jay. And he knew everything about me too. And so there were no more lies. There were no more secrets. There was a new relationship. And 2.5 years later, I married Jay. And we've been together for 17 years. I couldn't have a marriage in a relationship of 17 years if God wasn't in it. I wasn't humanly possible of accomplishing that on my own or being the mother that I am to my boys today. My greatest goal in life is one day to stand before Him and for him to look at me and say, "Well done, good and faithful servant, for whom I am pleased. Hurry home, because you have 3 precious children waiting on you." I am Lisa Luby Ryan, and I thank God every single day that I am second.